The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to today. A busy weekend for us here at Edstone. We had an anniversary weekend. I told you some about that at the start of Friday's program. And at our Sabbath service Saturday, we had some nice cake and treats. And I had a little spiel there before we started to indulge. Just hearkening back to the very beginning, the early stages of the PCG and some of the prominent personalities way back when, 1990, 1991, 1992, some of those that were immersed in the work of God back then, and some who are still with us today, they're still immersed into God's work. So it was great, just a wonderful weekend to think back, and of course, even from a local church standpoint here at Edstone, to have some of the brethren up from the London area, and a couple of our members that came down from Scotland. In fact, I met one of our trumpet readers, a listener to this program, who is visiting Edstone this weekend. She is here, or was here, I think she's on her way home now. She was here with her two daughters. She got to tour the radio studio, and she smiled and said, I got to see the heater that they put right behind your legs. So she is an avid listener. I mentioned that one time that I pulled it up so close, because it's chilly in here, that I could almost sit on the heater, and she was happy to see the studio and the heater that's just right behind the microphone, right behind me as I speak here. So she's coming along. She came down for the London campaign back in October. She mentioned that she's excited to attend the Glasgow campaign that we're tentatively scheduling for mid-March. We haven't locked that in with a hotel or a facility, so very good news to see her and her two daughters. Her lovely daughters came down with her, all smiles this morning as they toured through the Edstone facility. Well, together with the anniversary celebrations, we had our winter recital yesterday, last evening, and again, just lots of talent on display. And anytime we see those recitals too, we're just reminded of the wonderful opportunities that are there for our young people. The opportunities that are there for my own children. I spoke with my daughter on FaceTime last evening, and she had a great weekend as well. They had a big choir presentation, or a choir performance, on the Sabbath, where she was able to sing a short or a small solo part with the choir, and just a massive choir. I didn't get the full count, but really exciting to see that. I was able to see a video from headquarters Sunday morning. So to see her up there, and then to see my son on this end of the pond playing the piano yesterday. And by the way, I just dropped him off at Heathrow this morning. And he emailed me. This was his first big trip by himself. So I took him up to the counter, the check-in counter, and was observing him as he interacted with the lady there, and also with security, just letting him sort of fend for himself, imploring him to keep track of his passport and his money and everything else. He got through security and then emailed us that he was able to play his piece by Liebenstrom, I guess is how you pronounce it, from number 3 from Franz Liszt, the famous Hungarian composer from the 19th century. So if any of you've been to the Heathrow Airport, there's a nice waiting area with shops and eateries and such, and there's a beautiful piano there right in the middle of it all. So evidently, unless he was kidding, I couldn't quite tell from the email, but he said he got through security just fine, and he was able to sit down at the piano and play Franz Liszt, the same piece that he played last night at the recital. So that's pretty pretty funny, really, to think about that. I wish I would have been there to see that performance. Hopefully those that were milling around the piano in the Heathrow Airport enjoyed it. Speaking of fine music, if we have time, actually, later on, I didn't have as much time this morning because of the airport run to prepare everything, so I got a couple of music selections that we might be able to squeeze in later, and one of them is this piece, a beautiful piece. It's not the recording of Jude, my son. It's just something that I pulled down from YouTube. But if we have time, we'll conclude this segment with that famous piano piece from Franz Liszt. And then also, we were supposed to go, originally, I got the tickets ages ago, for the famous opera Carmen by the French composer Georges Bizet, or Bizet, I guess, to use the French pronunciation. Written in 1875, lots of famous songs in this opera. I don't think the story's maybe the most wholesome in the world, but the music, some of the music is just beautiful. And so if we have time, again, later on in the program, we'll play a selection from the opera that we were supposed to go to. We were able to offload those tickets. Once we rearranged some things and had the anniversary celebration up here at Edstone instead of down at London, my wife and I decided to stay here Saturday evening with some of the others, but we did find a couple who were able to take advantage of the tickets, and from what they said last night, they loved it. In any event, all of this this history, culture, this fine culture that we're able to enjoy in God's church, and even looking at my son as he went through security this morning, and in thinking about the opportunities that God gives to our children, our young people, I've thought a lot about John Quincy Adams as Jude was getting ready for this big trip as a 16-year-old heading across the pond on his own. And if you remember a few months back, we talked about Quincy when I think he was 12 or 13. Now, he did travel with his dad on this trip, but he went to Europe for the first time as a 10 or 12-year-old, I forget the exact age, and there were things that happened on that trip that were very traumatic, and yet he was encouraged to go again a couple years later, even when he didn't want to, and then you start accumulating all of these years, the many trips that he was able to take, and how he helped his father in Europe and traveled to Russia. And by the time he became America's sixth president, I think it was, John Quincy Adams, you talk about someone that really did benefit from all of those wonderful opportunities that he had as a youth, that his parents gave to him, and he really did take advantage of those opportunities in front of him. It makes me think of this clip that I think we've played before, but this was later on in Quincy's life when you'll hear David McCullough, the biographer, who is explaining this or quoting from a letter by Abigail, Quincy's mother. And this is when Abigail discerned that maybe her son was just getting a little bit too vain because of his intellect, because of his knowledge. He was widely read, even as a young man in his early 20s. And so here is David McCullough quoting from a letter that Abigail sent to her son to help him keep things in perspective. Clip two.
If you are conscious to yourself that you possess more knowledge upon some subjects than others of your standing, reflect that you have had greater opportunities of seeing the world and obtaining a knowledge of mankind than any of your contemporaries, that you have never wanted a book that has been supplied to you, that your whole time has been spent in the company of men of literature and science. How unpardonable would it have been in you to have been a blockhead?
It's So that's Abigail Adams. You heard it there, read by David McCullough. Abigail Adams writing to her 20-something son, saying how unpardonable it would have been in you to have been a blockhead, given all of the opportunities. It is exciting and encouraging when you see young people in God's church take advantage of those opportunities. And if they do, well, they should be light years ahead of so many others their age in the world today. They should be. Given the truth that they're exposed to, given the opportunities that they're given, it's quite an education, and it will accelerate their growth and their development if they'll just yield to it, if they'll just embrace it, if they'll embrace their history, as I covered on Friday's program, if they'll love their history and just give of themselves to God's work. I think about God's work and how much it's benefited me over the years, having grown up in the church. Some of the things I was able to do even before the establishment of the Philadelphia Church of God, going back to the worldwide days, going back to Ambassador College and the years leading up to that. It was right there at the start of the Laodicean era, so things were beginning to take a turn for the worse. But then on into the PCG and the many travels with my father and with colleagues around the world on TV trips or visiting with brethren, and I see my children now able to tag along in that sense, traveling all over the world. And today it's well, he can fly over to the United States in 8-10 hours. So much faster. The technology makes things move. And you think about some of our young people and even the many nations that they're able to visit. Those at headquarters coming in from Australia or from Canada or wherever. And then if they get transferred to Edstone or maybe they go on the Jerusalem dig. These are opportunities. Mr. Armstrong made a big point of that in the autobiography about just how important it is, travel, how important that is for your education. And together with that, the contacts that you make and the lectures and things that you hear. It's a wonderful blessing and benefit. I try to tell my children, as I explained to my son recently, even your own aunts and uncles, your grandfather, obviously. These are great blessings for you. And you want to do everything that you can to absorb their thinking, their way of life, their strengths. There's so many of them. You see how sad and tragic it is for a young person that grows up around all of this, all of these wonderful influences. How sad and tragic it is for someone to just turn and walk away from it when they have everything offered to them, everything. God's royal family, God's royal throne, the throne of David, ruling together with Jesus Christ, teaching the world God's way of life, born again into the family of God, a spirit being, an eternally living spirit being. What could be greater than that? What in this world could take you away from that? Well, there are lots of things, and Satan the devil is very deceptive. He works his powers of deception as the prince of the power of the air. And a lot of people, young people and adults, just go right along. And they won't fight for the truth. They won't stand up for the truth. We heard a message over the weekend here at Edstone talking about the December 7 anniversary for this church in 1989, and the December 7 anniversary of America's involvement in World War II, the attack on Pearl Harbor, 1941, and how that it took that attack to rouse the United States, the United States from sleep. It took the attack on Pearl Harbor to finally wake up America. It could have been different. It could have ended sooner. if America would have gone on the offensive earlier on. Same with Britain. What a mistake. Looking at it in hindsight, what a mistake it was to not act earlier, to take a passive, stance and just let things happen. Well, they were sure happening as Hitler and his Nazi machine devoured Poland and Czechoslovakia, all these nations. And then it was several years later and something like 60 million lives before that was finally squashed, that movement. All of that death, that carnage, that suffering. How much better would it have been for the West, for the United States and Britain, to take the offensive? Well, when you jump forward to December 7th, 1989, as small as that beginning was, a mustard seed beginning, the reason why there's been so much growth since then is because of that offensive mindset, that willingness to stand up for the truth, to stand up for God, to fight for God. My father had that fighting spirit, and so did John Amos, and so did those few people who supported them in 1989 and 1990. I mentioned over the weekend after Malachi's message was mailed out there in early January 1990, and it went to mostly to addresses from Oklahoma City and Enid, my father's old congregations in the Worldwide days, and then in and around Columbus, Ohio, where Mr. Amos, John Amos, used to pastor before he was then moved with his family to Oklahoma to assist my father there. And so that's where the early congregations, the first congregations of the Philadelphia Church of God emerged from Edmond and Columbus. But after that first mailing, it was a few weeks later, I think, when we had our first new people. There were the original 12, and then I was joined to the 12 3 weeks later. And then we waited, busily preparing Malachi's message, sending Malachi's message out to 921 addresses, I believe. And then the first visible, tangible fruits that we saw from that first mailing, it was a handful of elderly ladies that came down from Enid. They drove down 2 hours to Edmond for services and then came walking into services, and we were excited, and they were excited. Malachi's message had answered everything for them. This was how the PCG started. It makes you think of what the Apostle Paul said about not many mighty or not the wise and mighty of this world. God chooses the lowly, but he highly exalts us. We come in and we are trained to be leaders, to be royalty. We are royalty. Our children are royalty. And so we want to take advantage of these opportunities that God gives to us. Look at the growth and the development of the church over these past 29 years. And those brethren that have been with the PCG for all or part of that 29 years, they've grown right along with it. They wouldn't be here otherwise. Such a valuable lesson. It's right there in front of us. And when you're with God's work, When you're with the activities of God's church and work, you are going forward. You are growing and overcoming. If your heart's in the work, certainly you are. Now, obviously, it's certainly possible for someone to fill a seat for a time, but they're not going to stay around for that long, not in God's work. It's possible, I suppose, to go through the motions for a time. We're all human, and certainly someone can fool a minister even for a time. But for the most part, the overwhelming majority, the ones that have their hearts in this work, they're going to be growing and developing. we shouldn't. How unpardonable it would be for us to be a blockhead. We have been given it. We have been given everything that we need to be a smashing success. What a blessing. What an honor. What an honor it is to be in God's royal family. I'll go ahead and conclude this segment with this piano, this beautiful piano piece by Franz Liszt, the famous Hungarian composer. As I said earlier, this is a selection that I pulled from YouTube. It's not my son. After last night, he said, I just made too many mistakes. I'm looking forward to playing it again. I think he has the Edmund recital next week, so he's excited about that piano recital and just the chance that he gets to play this a second time. But listen, if you will, to this beautiful piece by the Hungarian composer Franz Liszt.
Thank you.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If the church came into existence as an instrumentality for getting people saved, then by what means did God try to save people prior to Christ's founding of the church? Jesus did not appear until 4,000 years after Adam and the original sin. If God is and has been trying to convert the world, what means did he use during that 4,000 years between Adam and Christ? Few people in the traditional Christian world have ever stopped to even consider these questions. To nearly everyone on earth, the very existence of the church is a great mystery. The biblical facts of the church's origin and its purpose for being are clearly revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's book, Mystery of the Ages. Request your complimentary copy today. It's offered free of charge, at no cost or obligation to you. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
What a contrast it is when you, well, like I said in the first segment, you have a wonderful anniversary weekend and you're thinking about such rich, illustrious history. You're around God's family. You're participating in culturally uplifting activities and such. And then you look at this world and then you look at the headlines. We have to. God says to watch and pray always. We have to watch what's happening, because it's all falling apart. It's all breaking down. You look at the Jeroboam administration in the United States, under attack, just a constant onslaught of attacks from every angle. And so here are the sentencing recommendations that the Mueller team puts forth. I guess it was late Friday afternoon. And all weekend, every single clip that I saw from Grabian, collecting all of the highlights from the weekend, impeach, maybe not every single one, but certainly a lot of them, impeachment, indictment. For what? Well, campaign financing. Well, I thought it was Russian collusion. No, it's much broader than that. I think he broke a law. A campaign financing law. And so we've got to get him. We've got to impeach him. The New York Times on page one today. Listen to this. When federal prosecutors recommend a substantial prison term for President Trump's former lawyer, Michael D. Cohen, they linked Mr. Trump to the crimes. To the crimes Mr. Cohen had committed in connection with the 2016 presidential campaign. It says what prosecutors did not say in Mr. Cohen's sentencing memorandum, filed on Friday, however, is that they have continued to scrutinize what other executives in the president's family business may have known about those crimes. Now we need to go after the Trump family. We need to go after the Trump business. And they zero in on a clause here or there, the emoluments clause in the Constitution. Now they're strict constitutionalists, don't you know? Because they have found a clause here or there that the Trump administration violated, or maybe a Trump relative, a son or a son-in-law, maybe his daughter, who knows? It says, after Mr. Cohen pleaded guilty in August to breaking campaign finance laws and other crimes, what are the other crimes? Russian collusion? No, tax evasion, some false information on a loan. These are the things that we're learning in all of these investigations. Make sure that you pay your taxes. And if you go and file for a loan, if you go to a bank and you file papers for a loan, make sure that you fill out all the information accurately. This is quite an education for the rest of us. All kinds of things like this. You, like I said last week, you read the featured article in the New York Times today, and not one time will you see the word Russia. Not one time. This never-ending attack. No end in sight. So Cohen's going to be sentenced Wednesday. It says the federal prosecutors in Manhattan shifted their attention to what role, if any, the Trump Organization executives played in the campaign finance violations. It says Mr. Cohen has provided assistance in that inquiry, which is separate from the investigation by the special counsel, Robert Mueller. So this is all separate, you see. There's Russia, there's collusion, there's obstruction, don't forget about that. There's, now Cohen, there's some tax fraud, there's some bank fraud, loan applications, maybe some campaign finance laws were broken. Whatever it is, we're going to find out, we're going to get them. We've got to get them. That's the goal here. We've got to get them. And so all the congressmen come out. They're just clasping their hands, rubbing them together. We're going to have a majority in January, and we are ready to roll with impeachment, with indictment, with whatever. And meanwhile, the rest of the world, look at what's happening. Europe is on edge. And you're not going to hear about this in the United States, not for a long time to come. Not until it's actually exploding in our faces will the everyday, average, ordinary American sit up and take note. Because in America, all that matters, all the time, 24/7, is politics. Politics. And get the president. Target the president. He's the enemy. Over the weekend in Paris, more violence, more protests. It wasn't quite as violent as previous weekends. But still, France is, the authorities there, they're having to make all kinds of arrests. They're trying to round up the troublemakers coming from these anarchist groups. The ones responsible for the looting and such. But you see police heavily armed on the streets of France, Paris. One journalist on the scene wrote for the Spectator, saying that protecting Macron is a vast deployment of officers equipped with water cannon, tear gas, flashbang grenades, and as a last line of defense, assault rifles. A lot of the famous tourist sites, many of the monuments, the ones that were attacked last weekend, they were closed off for the weekend. Another journalist at Spectator, he described the scene in Paris over the weekend. It says, not quite a ghost town, but when I emerged from the metro at Saint-Germain-des-Prés, at midday, central Paris was eerily calm for a Saturday in the festive season. I once lived in this district, and December was always a nightmare for shoppers and tourists. Not today. Louis Vuitton was shut and boarded, and so too Swarovski and a couple of banks. Most of the cafes, all of them shut down. It's like the whole economy in Paris just grinds to a halt because of the never-ending protests. Macron's already backed down. He's already done away with the fuel tax, but it's too little too late in the minds of many. They're upset. They're unhappy. They want change. And many of them don't even know what the change is. They just want change. They want something new. The status quo, it's not good enough. And so there's anger on the streets. And listen, it's spreading. As I say, it started with these green taxes or these carbon taxes. But there's just a general angry sentiment now. And it's not going away. And they're taking to the streets every weekend, expressing their anger, their dissatisfaction. And this has been building, really. It goes back to the 2008 financial crisis. It's been building since then. And it's spreading beyond France. Spectator said Macron's ejection from Olympus arrives at a time when the UK is in the EU endgame and the community is rattled. Jean-Claude Juncker called off a trip to Paris this week. France, its economy hobbled by an overvalued euro, now joins Spain, Italy, Germany, and Belgium in a state of social or political crisis or both. You're going to hear about this on CNN today? Will you hear about it at MSNBC or in the New York Times? If so, it's going to be pushed back to the back page. And that's about it. It's certainly not going to be talked about during the news cycle. Well, they're too busy. They've got to find bank fraud. They've got to find campaign violations. It's spreading. Belgium now has its yellow vest protests. I saw some headlines over the weekend about protests in the Netherlands. Germany, of course, as I said on Friday, they assembled together to select, well, the people from Angela Merkel's party to select a successor. I'll get to that in just a moment. But that Spectator piece mentioned Spain as well last week. They had their far-right party enter into the regional parliament for the first time. The first time in this country's, Spain's, democratic history. And, of course, you see the rise of far-right parties all across Europe. Merkel's replacement, Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer. I'm probably mispronouncing all these French and German words, but still... She has a replacement, and many are calling her the replacement, that is, Mini Merkel. In other words, it's the same old, same old. The Guardian says, had Merz, that was the rival candidate, had Merz won, the pundits would now be asking how long he would need to topple Merkel. Now they're asking how long Karrenbauer will be able to keep Merkel in power. Merkel wants her there because Karrenbauer will allow for her to continue as chancellor. But what about the anger that's building? Over the weekend, the CDU essentially voted for more of the same. And that's not going over well in France right now. They don't want more of the same. They want out with the old and in with the new. We wrote in the Trumpet, Brad McDonald and Richard Palmer, a while back. I think this is from a couple years ago. But it says, think about the consequences of German officials' deception. It's destroying the trust between Germany's government and the public. What happens when the majority of Germans realize they have been deceived? What happens when the majority of Germans lose confidence and trust in mainstream leaders? Frustrated and angry, the German people, as any people would, will seek an individual, a political party, willing to heed their concerns and solve Germany's migrant crisis. This was when we were writing about the migrant crisis just a couple years back. There's more crises to go with it all now. They're going to want change. They're going to want strong leadership. It says, let me just skip ahead to the latest Trumpet. This is from an article. I don't think it's out just yet. It might have been posted at thetrumpet.com. I'm not sure. But Richard assembled these paragraphs for me. My father says here, every reader should closely watch Germany. This nation is experiencing changes that will reshape the country and the whole of Europe. Yet, remarkably, most of the world is asleep to these dramatic developments. You see who's behind all of this nonsense in the United States. It's as if the devil is just putting us to sleep. He's rocking the cradle so that we'll just drift off into a deep slumber. My father says this is crucial, historic. This is a crucial historic time for the continent. Its migrant crisis and financial troubles threaten to explode. Radical Islam is now deeply entrenched and could launch further attacks at any moment. And now there's no strong leader at the helm. Can you see why we need to watch Germany? There's no strong leader there. That's all that they're waiting for. The empire's in place. It just needs the leader. That's what my father said in that first Key of David program on Emmanuel Macron and France squaring off against the United States of all nations, forgetting that history that America has had with Brother Reuben. Listen to what my father said just a few weeks ago on the Key of David, clip one.
There is a great empire there, a great empire that may have more potential than even that to become even greater in power than Russia or China or the U.S. It's there, this awesome empire, and there's only one lack in that empire. They need a strong man who will assert himself and tell Europe what they have to do to survive. But he's going to bring them something that's much more dangerous than he even imagines.
That's from my father's program just a few weeks ago. And then more recently, this is the next trumpet coming out. He says, current conditions in Europe, including the refugee crisis and the turmoil in German politics, provide probably one of the greatest opportunities ever for a new leader to come into power by flatteries. Chancellor Merkel is on her way out and is now a lame duck. Expect political and social crises in Germany and Europe, and public resentment and anger to grow even deeper. Expect it. The anger, the resentment, it's already spreading. You see it on the streets. It says, then watch, and this is what we're watching for next, then watch for a strong man to take advantage and make his way to power through flatteries. That's from my father's latest, coming out in the next Trumpet magazine. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a short Bible study. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. The Holy Roman Empire has made pivotal and defining contributions to Western civilization. But its many reincarnations have also come with painful and catastrophic consequences. European leaders aim to unite the fractured continent of Europe by reviving the legacy of this extraordinary church-state combine. One of the great lessons of this empire is that it always comes back. There is always another resurrection. To understand much more on this vital subject, call now and request our free book, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. The Holy Roman Empire is not just a relic of history. It is about to play a central role in world events. Coming to understand about the nature and character of this powerful institution tells you as much about the future as it does about the past. As part of this free offer, also request Herbert Armstrong's classic work, Who or What is the Prophetic Beast? Both booklets are available at no cost or obligation to you. In addition to the free book, you may also request a free subscription to our monthly news magazine, The Philadelphia Trumpet. The Trumpet examines world events under the clear light of Bible prophecy. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
There is going to be a resurrection of that old Roman Empire. Not very many people believe it. because people have gotten completely beyond really believing that the Bible means what it says. You're going to have to live and see it, and you're going to have to know that God was speaking when he said this thing is coming.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
There's a beautiful Psalm 90, where Moses, it's called there underneath the chapter, the subtitle there is A Prayer of Moses, the Man of God. A beautiful prayer where Moses talks about 1,000 years in the sight of God as but yesterday when it is past. That's how God views 1,000 years. He has an eternal mindset, our Father. And he wants for us to think in terms of eternity. Verse 10 of this same psalm, Psalm 90, it says, the days of our years are 70. That's all that most of us have, if that, 70 years or so. And if by reason of strength they be 80, yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off. And we fly away, it says. And that's it. That's it. Verse 12 says, so teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Teach us to use the short amount of time that we have, all of these opportunities and experiences, as I said in the first segment. We need to count those days. We need to number the days. We need to use each day wisely. We need to meditate on these things. On this wisdom, we have to appreciate, too, just how little time we have left. What are you doing with it? How are you using it? How are you spending your time in the science of spiritual warfare, the chapter in the Overcomer booklet? My father says our lives are comprised of time, precious time. We don't have much of it. Look at how quickly time is going by. The older I get, he says, the more I realize how easy it is to waste time. He says, to really wage effective spiritual warfare, we must learn to value time. We have to value it. We have to manage it. We can't waste it. Look at what's happening in Europe, as I said in the last segment. Look at the slumber that's setting in the United States. Luke 21 and verse 34, this is Jesus Christ. He says, and take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and the cares of this life, and so that day come upon you unawares. Be careful. Don't be caught unawares. It says, for as a snare shall it come on all them that dwell on the face of the earth. Most in the world, like my father says in his latest Trumpet article, most are just fast asleep. They don't see what's happening. Jesus says to us, watch you therefore and pray always that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. Watch, Christ said, and pray always. The devil's where he is well aware of how short his time is. You can see that in Revelation 12:12. Satan's counting the days. He knows his time is about up. My father's written before that America's time was up, were it not for one final blast of life, I guess you could say, the Jeroboam end, a temporary revival, but it's oh so temporary. In fact, we're in a critical transition stage, about to be born into God's family. Mr. Armstrong, as he wrote back in The Good News, 1984, and this physical growth, when you look at the growth of a fetus inside the mother, that's what we're experiencing spiritually, if we're growing in God's church. It says, and this physical growth is a type of the spiritual growth by feeding on the Word of God and prayer and Christian fellowship and participation in the work of God and the life of the begotten child of God. Mr. Armstrong says the difference is merely the difference between matter and spirit. One is a material growth. Material growth is measured by volume, size, weight. The other is spiritual growth, measured by character development. So there's a comparison here, and we can learn from it. You think about the fetus, right in those later stages, the last few weeks, 36 to 40, the last 4 or 5 weeks before the delivery, before the birth, and that fetus is putting on something like a half pound a week, which for that little infant, that's a massive amount of growth. That represents a lot of growth. And that's where we are spiritually. That's where we should be. As he said in that good news, this physical growth is the type of the spiritual growth by feeding on the Word of God and prayer and Christian fellowship and participation in the work of God, in the life of the begotten child of God. It's a wonderful, wonderful life in God's church. Take full advantage of it and make sure that you're using your time wisely each day and growing in godly character. To finish today's program, as I said at the start, we're going to play a famous selection from Georges Bizet's Carmen. This is Habanera. Enjoy.
Jamais connu.